Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
It was shocking and disappointing because we needed that seat to come through for us as hard as everybody worked, you know, to try to make a difference for the community. As another seat would have made a big difference. Convincing the immigration community that the census was safe was a challenge.
What is happening at the Coliseum right now cannot be characterized as an audit. The folks doing this, they're not auditors and they're not election experts. And it's hard to watch this unfolding and really think that they know what they're doing at all. I mean, they were using black lights and we don't know what that was about.
We're going to be able to tell every Arizonan in a few weeks that they can have complete integrity and trust in their elections, or that we have some parts of the election that need to be improved. There's nothing about this audit that has anything to do with trying to overturn the 2020 election. It's only about how to make elections better going forward.
A mass vaccination center in Glendale, Arizona. I asked the nurse, I said, "What's it like?" She looked at me and she said, "It's like every shot is giving a dose of hope," is her phrase, a dose of hope.
And with us to talk about President Biden's address to Congress, Arizona coming up short in the census, and a lot more, something called a ballot audit. We might get to that, I suppose. Lorna Romero of Elevate Strategies. Lorna, good morning.
Good morning.
And Chad Campbell of Strategies 360. Chad, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Lorna, let's start with the census numbers. There was this projection, I'm sure on this program we heard from 20 different people who said, of course Arizona is going to get that 10th congressional seat. The fact that we didn't, let's look at not why, but how that really affects the state. I want to get into the candidates, of course, in a moment, but just generally, how does this affect the short-term future of Arizona?
Well, you're 100% correct. I think this was probably the biggest shock that we've had so far this year. I think Republicans, Democrats, independents alike were banking on at least a 10th seat, and to see that not come to fruition was incredibly shocking. I mean, it impacts the state because I think it raises the question, is the growth that we've been projecting the past 4 years, have we been undercounting that? Did we undercount in the census? And then there's also the fiscal impact of the federal dollars that flow into the state based off of the census results. So just politics aside, it really does impact Arizona, because if we've had astronomical growth, which I think you and I have seen every year living in the valley, and not being able to get the federal dollars, it's really going to harm our ability to pay for infrastructure, education, healthcare, et cetera.
Yeah, Chad, in that sense, obviously for us on a program like this, we will and enjoy talking about candidates, how this affects who runs, who doesn't run. We'll get to that, of course, in a moment. But at the practical level, how much does this hurt the state?
Well, first of all, I think we should hire the cyber ninjas to audit the census as soon as they're done auditing the election results. That's my first proposal.
How much is it going to cost,
so,
though, Chad?
I think money is no object here. I think that should not be a part of the discussion. So I want to throw that out there. Hope people listening will back this plan I have. So, but on a serious note, this is a huge problem for the state. I mean, to Lorna's point, federal dollars are calculated on census numbers, and we got undercounted. You know, for a variety of reasons, there are different theories out there. But I think the predominant theory that probably has the most credibility is we were really undercounting in the Latino community, and probably a lot of that has to do with the Trump administration and their proposed census question. About putting a citizenship question on the census last year or in that last go around. And that really frightened the Latino community. I truly believe that. Talking to a lot of my friends and leaders in that community, they feel it had a huge impact on the census process. And it hurt us, not just politically, which we'll talk about here in a minute, but economically. And to Lorna's point, we are growing. Everybody knows we're growing. That's not going to stop anytime soon. And now we're going to get less federal dollars than we should compared to other states. And that means that somewhere, either the state or the local governments are going to have to make up that difference. So you can't just ignore the financial issues. Somebody has to pay for it, and we're not going to get our fair share from the feds now.
Lorna, does this mean that things that maybe the state was planning to do or maybe will need to do based on growing population will be harder or impossible to do given the less federal money that'll be coming in?
I'm sure it's going to pose a challenge. I mean, as Chad mentioned, it's going to put more of the strain on the state and these local governments to figure out how they're going to fund these projects. I mean, take transportation, for example. I mean, those are typically 10-year projects, and they usually bank off of federal dollars, which I'm assuming a number of local folks were expecting an infusion of additional dollars based off of an updated census count. Now that that's not going to happen, how is that going to impact some of these projects? And so it's really going to require our state and local leaders to reassess what these priorities are and to figure out where the money is going to come from.
So, Chad, let's delve into some of the political implications here. There's a saying that many members of the state legislature look in the mirror and see a member of Congress staring back at them. How many members of the legislature might be impacted by the fact that there will not be another seat to be competing for here?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure most people in Maricopa County heard a collective groan and several screams coming from the Capital Region when that news broke. You know, there were upwards of 20 members of the legislature at least that were looking at a proposed congressional run in a new district. And, you know, and some people thought we were going to get two districts. So that was the other theory out there. So, you know, a lot of us in the political space had been planning for at least one district, obviously. And that is a domino effect when you have that district open up and members of the ledge run for it. Maybe people on county board of supervisors or city councils run for it. And then new people run for those seats. So it creates this cascading effect of candidates coming into the pipeline. You know, there would have been a significant amount of Democratic legislators, I know from firsthand conversations, that probably would have left the legislature to run for a congressional seat. And it would have created a very new caucus next year or in 2023, I'm sorry. So it'll be interesting to see now where this goes and who decides not to run. You know, there's a couple incumbent Congress people here in the state that are thinking about maybe running for higher office. That may open up a seat or two still. And you've already had Congresswoman Kirkpatrick say she's not going to run again. So there's still going to be a lot of shifting of seats there, but nowhere near the magnitude of what we expected now.
Lorna, fewer dominoes falling from your perspective as well?
Yeah, 100%. I agree with Chad. There were a number of folks in Maricopa County who were either anticipating a new district in the East Valley or West Valley, and depending how lines were going to draw, you would have seen a mass exodus from the legislature and a handful of other, you know, local government positions to run for that seat. And like Chad said, it would create a domino effect, because if people are leaving legislative races, that creates new opportunities for candidates. Or if people see that they have a potential opportunity to run for Congress rather than a different for a statewide office. So we're not going to see what we saw 10 years ago when there was a mass exodus with, you know, new CD9 popping up, et cetera. But there's still going to be dominoes that fall. It's just not going to be as dramatic as what we've all anticipated as politicos for the past few years.
Well, so Lorna, as a follow-up to that, we know how important redistricting was going to be anyway. Does this make redistricting even more important for folks like Greg Stanton, maybe even Andy Biggs, as he contemplates maybe a Senate run?
You know, it's important, but then it's a question of, well, since we did not see the growth that we anticipated from the census result, we're not drawing a new district. How much are these districts going to change throughout this new process? I mean, we're drawing new lines, but we're not creating any new districts. So from a congressional standpoint, we'll see what the work of the IRC ends up resulting as. But I really don't foresee it to be such a huge change. I would expect CD9 to remain pretty competitive based off of the demographics of that district. And if you look at Andy Biggs's district, I mean, maybe they do draw in some of the more competitive regions of the East Valley that are growing and becoming more moderate. But I would anticipate that that would still be a pretty safe district. I think the bigger play right now is going to be folks who were previously considering congressional run, if they're going to jump in for a statewide race instead.
And Chad, as a follow-up to that, does this preclude, let's say, with 9 congressional districts instead of 10, does that mean maybe some people who wanted to run just decide to really bunch up into a couple of districts? And then follow up on what Lorna had to say in terms of, does this actually move more people into statewide office as opposed to Congress?
Yeah, I think that is a very good possibility, or a very real possibility, excuse me, to Lorna's point. I think there are probably a handful of people that are now looking at statewide seats as opposed to congressional seats. And I think there are certain people who are just going to say, you know, we're going to stay put, be it at a legislative seat or a city or a county level. So, you know, it'll all depend on how this IRC process does play out. Again, obviously, if you have somebody like a Congressman Stanton or Congressman Biggs leave office, and that opens up those seats, and then you'll have a bunch of people flock to those seats, I think. But it all kind of now is contingent on the IRC process in some ways. And I think to Lorna's point, with the way our growth has happened over the past decade in terms of demographic growth, I think it's going to be very hard for the IRC to drastically change these congressional maps now if they do it in a fair and constitutional process as the IRC is directed by the voter-approved ballot measure. So I think you're going to have districts that are very similar to what they are now, quite frankly. I don't think it's going to be that seismic shift that we all expected. And I think that's going to actually probably force more people to stay put where they are, to be honest with you.
All right. So, Lorna, let's go to the Veterans Memorial Coliseum for at least a few moments and talk about what's going on inside there. There is some debate whether this should be called an audit or something else. I will leave to each of you what you'd like to refer to it, keeping in mind it is a family program here. I want to get your initial reaction to what you have seen, what you have heard about, you know, this process and how it's starting to play out with this counting.
I thought at first you were referring to the Crazy Town Carnival or whatever that's called.
Well, I think that is one of the ways that some people are referring to what's going on inside also.
You guys can't see. Mark just got a face tattoo, so watch
it. You know, I think it applies to both. I am just baffled by the process. And, you know, and I was one of those early on your program, shortly after the 2020 election, when people were saying voter fraud and we need to audit. I'm like, Arizona did a great job. Maricopa County did a phenomenal job counting 2.1 million votes. And then even going through additional processes to ensure, you know, the voters of Arizona that every vote was counted properly and diligently. And then to see now this process unfold, which I think the individuals on the ground there were even more confused by the process than those of us, you know, observing from the outside, did not instill any confidence in me about what's going on down there. And even though they've tried to provide additional information, even being forced to provide additional information after, you know, court hearings this week, I continue to be baffled. We'll see what their end result is going to be on May 14th. But I'm 100% confident in what the vote tally was in Maricopa County. I think this is just a distraction, and I can't wait for it to be over.
Well, Chad, it seems as though the more details that Cyber Ninjas release, the more questions they raise than questions they answer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure they're going to bust out the divining rods starting tomorrow down there. That's going to be the next accuracy tool they use. It's hard to come up with words to describe this. And if it wasn't such a serious matter that we're talking about, it would literally be one of the funniest things I've ever seen. These UV lights, these like turntable trays they're spinning the ballots around on. It's a farce. The whole thing's a farce. Everybody knows it's a farce. I'm pretty sure most of the Republicans involved in this know it's a farce. It's not going to change the election. We all know that. The election is done. The outcome is done. There's been no fraud at all. It's been proven time and time again. Every court challenge was thrown out with literally zero grounds for it for all of those challenges. But the problem is this continues to undermine confidence in our elections and in our process. And I just saw a poll this morning, and it shows that I think it's like over three quarters of Republicans still believe that Joe Biden stole the election. And that is insanity. That is the definition of an insanity. And putting aside partisanship for a minute, having that many people believe our elections are fraudulent are going to create serious problems for our country moving forward. We have to believe in the process to remain a democratic country and remain a country that is based on guiding principles of voter participation, a civic involvement, and a peaceful transfer of power, which we did not have for the first time in our country's history, basically, this past year. And this whole process, even though it's a joke and it's limited to Maricopa County, it is a microcosm of an ongoing campaign for certain elements in the political space to undermine voter integrity and make voters believe that somebody and some evil, you know, secret forces are out there at work trying to undermine our democracy. And that is a big problem. This thing should be put to bed and done with. And the people running this should be ashamed of themselves, quite honestly. It's comical, but again, It's doing severe long-term damage to our country.
Chad, when you said put it to bed, that made me think of the MyPillow guy. I hope that's not where you were going with that. Sorry.
you guys are ruining my Friday right now. I just want to point that out. Thank you very much.
Chad Campbell of Strategies 360, Lorna Romero of Elevate Strategies. With Mark Brody, I'm Steve Goldstein. Friday NewsCap continues after this. It's the Friday NewsCap here on KJZZ with Mark Brody in Phoenix. I'm Steve Goldstein. Our guests today, Chad Campbell of Strategies 360 and Lorna Romero of Elevate Strategies. Lorna, I wanted to ask as a follow-up to what's going on with some of the people and some of the reputations maybe here in Arizona. Senate President Fan has always had a good reputation. Ken Bennett, maybe before he ran for governor, had a very good reputation. Does this look poor for folks like this to be so associated with this?
I don't think it's necessarily helpful for the Republican Party brand as a whole, given the direction that I think we all know that we need to move towards for the next election cycle, given what we learned with losing another U.S. Senate seat and then obviously not winning, you know, President Trump not winning in Arizona. So I don't think this is helpful in terms of regaining trust and confidence of moderates or moderate-leaning independents. But their personal brands, I think Karen Fan's a phenomenal Senate president. She's listening to the will of the voters that she's hearing from and from her members. Ken Bennett, I mean, he's a mixed bag at this point. As you mentioned, when he ran for governor and he was leading the birther movement against President Obama, I think some of the perspectives about him changed. But, you know, the bigger question is, I know that this is all the hype right now. You know, everything that's happening with the audit, the crazy town carnival that we want to call it. But how long is this going to stick in voters' minds? I mean, May 14th, they'll have their final assessment, whatever happens of that. And then is this still going to be top of mind leading into 2020? Who knows? It remains to be seen how much of an issue this is going to be moving forward.
Chad, let me ask you about one of the issues that a lot of folks have brought up, which is the financial aspect in terms of who is paying for this. Do you have any measure of confidence that we'll ever know who's funding this thing?
Probably not with any certainty. You know, and I find it ironic that the Republicans passed a bill this session to forbid private outside money to be involved in the running of elections, but then they're using private outside money to pay for this audit. The irony there is so rich. It looks and sounds like maybe this is being funded by Patrick Byrne, the former founder of Overstock, who's a conspiracy theorist to the nth degree, who still says to this day that the election was fraudulent. He's not an unbiased person by any means. And it sounds like he and his organization are funding some of this from what I've read and from some of the research that I've looked at. But are we ever going to have a concrete answer, any definitive proof? Probably not, because there's no transparency about this, which is the ironic part, is they're claiming the whole audit's about finding or proving transparency and accountability in our election system, but there's actually no transparency or accountability with how the audit's being run. And it sums up the entire fiasco that this audit represents.
So, Lorna, as you guys have made clear, a lot of folks who are down at the Coliseum don't necessarily believe that Joe Biden is president, but he gave his first official address to Congress, whether it's really called the State of the Union or not. He did talk to Congress about some of the goals that he has laid out. Some people think it wasn't bipartisan enough. Other people think it was perfect, right down the middle. Obviously, people have different perspectives on that. But I want to ask you from an Arizona perspective. And when it comes down to the position that some of the things that President Biden says he wants to do, whether it's in the realm related to the filibuster, whether it's on the border, whether it's just related to big packages and maybe even raising taxes, what sort of position does that put Senator Mark Kelly in as he tries to run for a real term rather than filling out a term? Let's put it that way.
Oh, it puts him in a very difficult position. And I would have to agree with those who didn't think that it was bipartisan enough. And to me, the agenda that he laid out sounded very expensive. So this is really going to put Mark Kelly and then even Kyrsten Sinema, when she's going to be up for re-election, it's going to put them in tough spots because Arizona is a very moderate state. I know that everybody likes to say that there was a blue wave and, you know, Arizona is turning blue, et cetera. Arizona is very purple. And so to be pushing these policy agendas that are that are being advocated by the far left isn't going to be helpful if they want to maintain that seat in Arizona. And so to be pushing higher taxes and giving more power to labor unions, et cetera, that's just going to put Mark Kelly in a tough spot. And so we'll see if he goes with Biden or if he goes with the majority of the voters of Arizona and goes against the administration, but it's going to be very difficult for him.
Now, Chad, we know Mark Kelly continues to raise amazing amounts of money. Is he, in fact, in a tough position, maybe when it comes to the border or other things, or is he a strong enough candidate on his own?
Yeah, you know, you knew it was going to come that Lorna and I were going to finally disagree this morning, so we hit that point. I think Joe Biden's speech was a very well-laid-out vision for not just Arizona, but for the country, obviously. And the labels of left and right, or progressive, conservative, whatever, the policies he's proposing are supported by the vast majority of Americans and Arizonans. And after 4 years of Trump, where he didn't invest anything in our country, he drove our debt up higher than any non-wartime president in the history by about $8 trillion. People are clamoring and dying to see a president who actually wants to govern and invest in the things we need to fund and build and maintain to stay competitive in a global economy. And all of those things that Joe Biden is talking about are those investments in infrastructure, healthcare, education, fighting climate change while creating jobs. All of those things represent what Americans and Arizonans want. And so I think that, you know, the labels are, I think labels are convenient for the political hacks and people like, you know, me and you, Lorna, and others. But the average person wants to see investments. They want to see our country being governed again. And they're desperate for that after 4 years of Trump. So, you know, again, are there some needles that have to be threaded and some particular policies that Mark Kelly may differ on from Joe Biden? Of course, no doubt about that. And the border issue is a complicated one. And we've talked about this on the show a few times over the past couple of months, I know. And that's going to be a point that has to be addressed. And the Biden administration has to kind of get their handle around that. But a lot of that is a hangover from the Trump administration, quite frankly. And I think, you know, by the time we move to next year, that border situation is going to be calmed down and things are going to be a little more stable down there. And so I believe that Mark Kelly is going to be able to support a lot of the Biden vision for the country and for the state. And at the same time, use that vision to actually get reelected and show voters that he's willing to govern. And we're back on track as being the greatest country on the planet.
Chad, when you talk about threading the needle, though, a lot of the conversation comes back to, will the president's policies be able to get through the Senate with the filibuster in place? And, you know, there is some doubt that is actually a possibility. Do you see added pressure on someone like Kyrsten Sinema to, if not get rid of it altogether, to maybe change how and when it can be used in certain circumstances?
Yeah. Can I filibuster your question about the filibuster? Is that allowed on the show?
You may not. We have ended the filibuster on this show.
Look, I can't speak for any of our senators, right, or any of our elected officials. There's an ongoing conversation about that. I believe that there are conversations about how to reform it, if you need to reform it. What I would say is I think both of our senators are committed to getting things done for the state and for the country. And again, if you want proof of that, if you look at the COVID relief package that was just passed, Arizona got an amazing investment from that package. And that did not happen by accident. That was because we have two senators who are working very hard to represent our state. And the money and the support and the resources coming into our state from that package it is of historical proportions, and we have both our senators to thank for that.
Lorna, follow up on that. Is that one of those things, you know, my thought was that since Mark Kelly, much like Raphael Warnock in Georgia, is so important to Democrats, that maybe there was a little extra incentive there for Arizona.
Well, possibly. I mean, and that's nothing new. That happens all the time in Congress. When they need to be helpful to a certain member, they give them a little extra or let them take the win. That happens with Republican administrations, Democrat administrations, et cetera. But one thing that I want to point out, and I know Chad is threading the needle nicely when it comes to Senator Kelly, is, you know, if Senator Kelly is going to have to vote against the Biden administration on a priority in order to, you know, really represent the people of Arizona, is he going to have the similar wrath of the far left like Kyrsten Sinema's had recently? I mean, is there going to get a point where the honeymoon phase is over with the progressives with Mark Kelly if he decides to go down a more moderate road And they start attacking him and start saying, well, then we're going to get somebody else, like we're seeing with Kyrsten Sinema. So I think Mark Kelly really has, he's in a difficult spot, because if he goes too far moderate, then he's potentially going to get attacked by the far left. And so that's what he's going to need to figure out for this next election cycle. And then his future, you know, if he does make it out of it, representing Arizona.
Chad, let me follow up on that, because, you know, there have been efforts in the past to, for example, censure Senator Sinema for not doing enough of what the state Democratic Party would like for her to do. Are those real problems for Arizona's Democratic U.S. senators? Like, is it possible, for example, that the Democratic Party wouldn't support one of them in an election?
No, ultimately, I don't think so. And, you know, I look at the late Senator John McCain on the Republican side. He dealt with some of the same issues with his own party and attempts to censure him and, you know, attacks from the likes of Kelly Ward and folks like that. And ultimately, I don't think that'll happen on the Democratic side. I think that both of our senators have a very good track record to stand on. They can't make everybody happy all the time. I think most people accept that. And the question will be, you know, how do things shape up over the next 6 to 8 months for Mark Kelly, obviously, and as he transitions into that full campaign mode again, and what the Democrats accomplish over the next course of the of 2021 here. And obviously, Senator Sinema has a longer time frame for her reelection. But again, you know, when they're doing things like passing the COVID relief package, when they're accomplishing things like that, I think ultimately most Arizonans, including most progressives, will appreciate and support their efforts to invest in our state.
And the clock has stopped us, so we'll have to stop there. Chad Campbell of Strategies 360, Lorna Romero of Elevate Strategies. Guys, thanks as always. Take care.
Thanks, everyone.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.